You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Talk is Jericho, baby.
All right, we are here in a very small little dressing room with two large men and me, the Gates of Agony, Toliana, and Bishop Khan. And it's really interesting because a few months ago, right when Kenny and I were starting to do the Golden Jets, we were looking to get a good match and get like a win, and Tony suggested the Gates of Agony, and I hadn't really seen much of your stuff or knew a lot about you guys, but we had a great match. I remember really enjoying that one.
Yeah, no, thank you for having us. And yeah, that match was a good trajectory after that. We kept getting more opportunities following, so.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that's interesting to me is that you guys both pretty much started, I know, Khan, you've been working a little bit longer, but basically, you were never a team until AEW.
Yeah, that's correct. We literally got signed the same day. Before we met with Tony, I went up to Toe and I was like, hey, never met you before, but I watched some of your dark matches, and he said to me likewise, and we hit it off for a couple hours and then got signed at the same time, so it's kind of ironic.
Tell me what happened when you guys got signed.
It was funny because we were on dark and like we were hungry for opportunities, and we both would size up the competition on dark, and we both had that respect to each other. We're like, all right, there's something here, like there's a tangible to where like, all right, I don't think you suck. And then and it kind of panned out when Tony brought us in his office and he asked us like, hey, what do you guys think about tagging with each other? And like, we love the idea, one, because we're hungry for opportunities, you know, one, and then two is like the fact that we hit it off without even knowing we're gonna be a tag team. We felt like it was meant to be.
Is this the darks that were happening at Universal Studios or the darks during the pandemic?
Universal Studios, yep. For me.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Sam, I did one, I think, in Garland, another one in Jacksonville, but the other one was in Orlando.
How did you get booked in dark in the first place?
So I was signed to Ring of Honor before coming over here, and when we went out of business, kind of, I say, like a little birdie reached out to me, but it was QT Marshall sent into my DMs and reached out and was like, hey, out of the group of people that want to come over from the original Ring of Honor, we kind of want to bring you over here. Are you free this day? And it was like 2 days after Final Battle. So I made up the drive to Garland and then had my first dark match against Andrade. So very quick process.
How about you, Toa?
It was funny. So I'm trained under by like Rikishi and Reno, and also out of that same school is Miro. And he was taking me under his wing. And I just, one day I just asked him, man, like I was stuck. I had no tryouts for any companies. And I feel like I had a decent amount of value. I just didn't have an opportunity for people to see me. And then he asked me, he's like, I can reach out to see and get an opportunity at dark. Hilariously, I said no at first.
Oh, why?
I came home. Well, because I knew once you get one opportunity, it's the first chance they see you is probably your best representation. So I wanted to make sure I'm ready for that moment.
Gotcha.
Mind you, I moved from the Bay Area to LA to get ready for said moment. So when I came home to my wife and I told her, she's like, shut up and call him back. Say you're going to take that tryout. And then I hit him back up, and then I got in contact with QT and, yeah, got everything set up for Orlando.
Who was your first dark match with?
I was tagged with this guy named Mike, and it was against FTR.
Gotcha. How about you?
It was Andrade, then Adam Cole, then Kazarian. So just they threw me right in the fire.
So you guys are here, and because I remember the feeling, too, when you show up as the new guy. And you said you kind of saw each other, you know, across the crowded room, proverbially. And when you say you're sizing up the competition, are you thinking, okay, like, how do I get to the next step and get hired, right?
My thought process is this. If I can be the best talent coming out of dark, I will have no question or no, like, thought process of mine. Well, like, if I'm the best person coming out of this, I should be the next up. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was my mindset.
I kind of just looked at the landscape. I was like, who kind of looks similar to me? Right. There's another big guy with long hair and tattoos who kind of works like more, I guess, old school style. Like, we don't do too much in our matches. Right. So I can see how he was booking his dark match. I'm like, all right, this is the one guy I might have to worry about. Otherwise, I think I have this.
You know, it's funny because I remember when we talked, like, we don't do much, but you guys have, it was great though. Whatever it was that we did was great stuff.
Yeah.
I don't remember high spots or anything, but it was just good. That's what you, that's the most important thing, right?
Yeah. For me, like, I was trained by Joey Mercury, and it was about intention, intensity. Like, he'd always talk about Finn Finley, Regal, Eddie, Benoit, Angle. Like, as long as you're intense, these people will just keep their eyes on you. Mm. So just, like, working at a very high rate, just beating some up as, like, aggressively as possible, just make it seem very real. So I think that makes us stand out when we don't do too much.
It does, especially now when there's so many guys that it's just the way the business is. Lots of high spots and lots of high impact moves. But to me, I mean, I did a match with Ishii where we chopped each other for 8 minutes straight. I mean, that worked probably better than any match I've had in a while. So I see what you're saying. It's good that Joey taught you that.
Yeah, also kind of beat me up all the time. But
yeah. Where did you train with him?
He saw me at Maryland Championship Wrestling, MCW, and then Ring of Honor was starting its own dojo system, and he's like, out of the group of the guys here that I want to bring over there, I'm one of the guys. We did like developmental contracts, kind of like NXT, but like in Ring of Honor.
Sure.
So I got to work with him about a year and a half.
I feel Joey's probably one of the forgotten great workers in the business. Yeah,
mastermind.
Yeah. I mean, he had some issues with demons and that sort of thing. He would tell you that himself, but in the ring, I thought he was pretty great.
Yeah, genius. Like, he was teaching us how to work TV wrestling and making us really care about the moments, all about, hey, whenever that red light's on you, this is your moment to really just stand out and, like, hey, look at me.
Right.
Like, do this spot, do whatever moves you want, but, like, just really, like, work the camera. So I feel like a lot of people in the independents don't get to learn like that. So he's teaching us, hey, talk to your producers, talk to the referees, talk to the creative team. This is all your segment. No matter how long it is, those 10 seconds, 60 seconds is your time. So make sure you literally cross your T's, dot your I's for every little moment.
He's right, yeah. Yeah. For sure. It's good training to get.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Toa? You mentioned training with Rikishi.
Yeah. And I'm a pandemic wrestler in itself. So my debut was my first time in front of a live crowd.
Oh, wow.
For the most part, yeah. So one thing it was just instilled in me was, like, that red light on that camera. Like, we did our little Zoom, like, weekly shows and stuff. So every time I try to find that red light. So in essence, I was training for TV wrestling because I could have had a crowd to work for. So I was working angles, working camera shots and stuff like that from the beginning. And anytime.
So you're saying you trained when there was no people?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So I trained right when the pandemic happened.
Oh, wow.
As soon as I signed up, pandemic happened. And yeah, so I didn't even get to do a live show before until March 2021.
So do you think that that helped you then? Because you mentioned you now have to play to the camera because there's no crowd to play for. You feel that, I mean, obviously learning in front of no people is different than how I would have learned or how Bishop would have learned.
I would say it's paying off now, but when I first transitioned to where there was a live crowd, it was definitely a learning process on how to use the crowd to my benefit and ride the crowd versus, you know, just going with whatever I recently called or whatever I wanted to do. I kind of, like, now it's like, all right, I listen to the crowd and, like, they tell me what to go next.
Mm.
Where early on, it was hard for me to even do that because I never had reps against that.
Right.
So, like, now that I'm transitioning into, like, learning how to work with the crowd better and, you know, just filling it out there, now in my subconscious, I already got the TV spot ready where I'm like, all right, here's my chance. Let me stand tall. Where's that red dot? Boom. I'm already there without even have to, like, worry about it now. Now I can just, like, focus on the crowd.
Mm. Oh, you didn't want to start during the pandemic, but you signed up and then the pandemic happened.
Yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So I was a trainer with Rikishi.
Man, it was awesome. my thought process when I first started going to wrestling was, all right, who can teach me to be the best wrestler I can? And I was living in San Diego, and Rikishi School's in L.A., and I was like, man, no better person to teach me how to be a Samoan wrestler than a Samoan Hall of Famer. You know, so training under him, man, it was 3 times a week. He really took a lot of time out of training to work on with me, like, you know, after class or before class, you know, because he saw I was really invested in it, you know, like me and my whole family, man. It was like coming into post football, you know, got hurt and I was doing the powerlifting stuff. But I know, like, man, if I bench 700 pounds, it's not gonna put $1 million in my bank account.
Right.
So I was like, I need to make a lateral move here because I don't know what to do. And then, you know, my wife suggested, you know, wrestling. So then that's when I looked it up. And once I decided to do that, just put all our eggs in this one basket, mm-hmm. whether it was us moving to the Bay Area during the pandemic to live with family so I could still drive to LA for training, or whether it was us driving to LA to fully commit to training and hopefully get an opportunity, you know, those little things. So, yeah, I was happy that he was able to take us in. And
are you Samoan?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Half Samoan, half Puerto Rican.
So because every Samoan are cousins in one way or another.
Right? That's not a lie.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
Do you know any other Samoan wrestlers?
Oh, man, I know the whole family tree.
Gotcha,
For the most part, you know. Yeah. I was trained recently at the same time, or a little after Cepha was there, or better known as Solo.
Oh,
he was looking out for me a lot during the times where I was going to darks and, like, we'll have phone calls and... You know, we were kind of doing it together because right when he got signed was like right when I was getting my opportunities at AEW. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're kind of like growing together in a sense. And even now, like, he always kind of like looks out for me and stuff like that.
That's cool. What's your background, Bishop?
Wrestling wise or?
Like, I mean, like, he's Samoan. And okay. What are you?
I'm Cameroonian, Irish, and Czechoslovakian.
Wow.
Czechoslovakia doesn't exist anymore. It's Czech Republic. But my dad's from Cameroon, West Africa. Came to the States when he was like 16.
But there's more to it than just that, though. You have some kind of royal ties, right?
So I'm a legit Cameroonian prince. My grandfather was the chief of our village, Bua. And, like, I like to tell people this. Back in the day, there's this thing called Bakwari, which is like a wrestling style. So the ways the chiefs became chiefs was first person that got slammed to the ground became the chief of, like, all these different villages. So I like to think that my grandfather did that. He probably bought his way into his position.
Mm-hmm.
After he passed away, it got passed on to my father, and I'm next in line. So I get to, at least I went back there about a decade ago, didn't literally have to touch the ground if I didn't want to. People would wash my clothes, make food for me, drive me around the city.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
So it's like coming to America.
Yeah, really. It was very surreal. Like, we had drivers. I remember going to my uncle's house. I say mansion, it's like a big house in the village. Like, there's small huts, but then when you drive and there's paved roads and there's like this huge, like, 2-story house and they have a servant and driver. It's just very, I never experienced that before.
Well, yeah. I don't know why you're not living in Cameroon.
It's not the most safest place to live, but I could definitely go back when I want. I know my dad just built a house out there too. But I always feel like I was destined to wrestle just when I learned about Bakwari and, like, this traditional wrestling style, and then hearing about my grandfather being the chief, and I'm like, oh, I'm real royalty out here.
What is Bakwari? Explain that.
So it's just like Greco-Roman style wrestling. I don't think there's necessarily points, but at least when I saw videos about it, just basically grappling, and then whoever gets slammed to the ground first wins. Mm. I mean, yeah, who gets slammed down wins. They don't do that anymore. There's this thing called Wasu, which is like a hybrid of Bakwari.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have like big tournaments in other places, like in Ghana. I haven't seen it live, but it is out there. Yeah.
But is there pro wrestling there?
Not in Cameroon, but I know there's some in South Africa.
Gotcha. So when Tony brings you guys in his office, did you both know that you were both getting called in? Or was it like one guy goes in first and the other guy's in there? Was it like Tony wants to talk to both of you?
I think it was Tony who wants to talk to both of us.
Yeah.
I believe Sean Dean was like, hey, in Q2, was just like, hey, he wants to talk to both of you guys at the same time. And it was funny because, again, we were just talking for like 3 or 4 hours and we're just getting giddy and like, oh, what's going to happen? Like, we're getting signed today. He flew us out here for what? We're just hanging out at the show. We're not wrestling.
Yeah.
What's going to go on? So, yeah, crazy experience.
So did he have the name and everything like that? What did he say?
He didn't really have a name. He had like an idea or like an image for us to be like Road Warrior-esque, like on how we worked and stuff. So it was like, oh, that works right up in our alley. And then the name he did come up with, or definitely helped us come up with, when we were kind of going through some trial and errors with some names. And then originally we were going to go with Gates of Truth.
Yeah.
And then he made the change to Agony. And mm. Oh, yeah, we like that.
That's we'll better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gates of Truth sounds like a law office or something. Yeah. Like so now you guys are a team.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because there's a lot of times, like, I remember when I first started out, I was with Lance Storm. We're going to be a team forever. And you're thinking about being a team. You guys are obviously singles. Now you're together as a team. What's your mindset now? Because when you're working just the single style, it's different from being a tag team.
Before Toa, I was in the tag team in Ring of Honor for 2.5-3 years. So I already had that experience a little bit. We were called the Soldiers of Savagery, SOS. We were part of Shane Taylor Promotions.
Gotcha.
Shane Taylor's now Ring of Honor too.
Right.
So I had that experience, but I remember telling him, because Joey would tell me this, being part of Eminem, hey, if we're going to be in a tag team, we have to hang out all the time. We have to talk every day. We have to become good friends. We have to communicate, because that will show on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so then people see us here all the time, like, hey, you guys don't have to hang out. Well, we're always together. Training room together, catering room together, texting each other every day. Like, we have to solidify that bond outside the ring so it's more cohesive in ring.
That was something that me and him both agreed on right from the beginning. So it was like one of those things again where it was like, this is the perfect marriage, if you will, to be put together with in a tag team with someone that has the same train of thought and the same work ethic.
Right.
Because like, we both feel like we can become huge single stars whenever the time's ready, but we know and we are both confident and almost competitive to an extent that we want this tag team thing to work first.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be one of the best tag teams first. And then wherever the chips fall after that, whether we stay a tag team, anything we do, we're going to give our full effort. Nothing that we can like look back and have any regret.
It's a great way to be. And also, too, it's like there's been a lot of times when tag teams get put together where they don't like each other. So it's so much more special when you actually do like each other and mm-hmm. have a common goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and it's like there's also a lot of teams that want to be singles, and there was one in particular, I don't want to say any names. It's like, dude, don't break up. Like, you'll have your chance to be a single when it's right, but right now this is hot. This is your spot on the show.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And that's smart for you guys to think that way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, it's crazy. Like our second tag match was against FTR.
Yeah,
like main event, Battle of the Belts, second time we've ever tagged. And just like little things like who holds their hand out and like how to make the tags and just talking.
Let's talk about that. It's funny. What you just said is holding who's tagging who.
Because
when you first start out, if you both go for the tag, it's like two white guys trying to high five, you miss. Right?
Yeah.
And that's a secret that people listening might not realize. You have to decide, okay, I will hold my hand out.
Yep.
You make the tag, right? Yep. Is that something you said you figured out from FDR?
Yeah, just like I feel like we whiffed on one of the tags. It's just like we're still getting to know each other.
Yeah.
And just even like our pacing, getting into the next spots and just, hey, we can breathe. Let's just communicate. But we've never wrestled each other before. We've never wrestled as a team before, once before that. But it was kind of like a handicap match against the greatest living tag team right now. It's like just so much pressure and like, okay, we have to perform. But then again, just to get the cohesiveness down. But I think we've come around and we've been together, what, over a year and a half now and
yeah.
a well-oiled machine, so.
Everything's starting to click that we just came back from Japan, and I feel like that moment as going into now, our confidence is at an all-time high when it comes to tag team wrestling. And almost like when we think of things or like what our potential is and what it could be, we know we're physically capable of doing the in-ring things. We know we're physically capable of doing whether it's the marketing side of things, but in lifting, say you hit something for 3 reps, you can get the math and figure out what you can do for 1 rep.
Mm.
But until you physically do it, you can't say that's your 1 rep
right.
until you physically do it. So for us, going to Japan and us physically showing that we're capable of the ring, physically showing that we're capable of wrestling the top guys in the world, not just Japan, and you know, proving that we can showcase on a PR marketing level that Gates of Agony is an attraction and we can do something, that's when it was like, okay, now that's why our confidence is high, because these are all things that we already knew that we're capable of. But until you do mm-hmm. it, are you? You know, so you know, always had that one. I'm big self doubt guy, so I'm the most confident person that has the most self doubt at the same time. And that one self doubt, that's the only thing I can't keep quiet until like I prove it.
Let's quickly talk about powerlifting for a second. I never really delved into that here before. You mentioned that you're powerlifting. You said in lifting you can figure out your max when you do a 3 sets. How much were you into that sport? How far did you get in it?
I competed in the Kern U.S. Open, which is one of the biggest powerlifting competitions in the world, to where first place took home $40,000. And I did pretty decent. I took fourth in the strongest weight class, which was the super heavyweights. My best numbers were squat 750, Bench 635 and then deadlift 750.
That's insane. So let's talk about, like, when you squat, how far down do you have to go? What's the official?
So break parallel. So right where the knee and the hip crease meet, right under that.
Creates meat?
Like, so the top of the knee and the hip crease, like right where your hip joint is.
Gotcha.
Like, so right when you squat down, there's a line.
Ah.
So as long as your hip breaks that line.
Wow.
Yeah,
and that's the hard part too, because there's no way, there's no coming back if it's too heavy.
Yeah, and then if you go too low, and there's a whole science to it too, because if you want to get to the most, to where like you can get the most out of the lift, so every lifter is different. Whether it's like they do better with more of a rebound, they do better if like more of a stop at like a certain spot. But sometimes if you stop, there ain't no coming back up. So everyone's different.
How is it for the bench press then?
They give you an easy up call. So that was my bread and butter. As I literally just pick it up, put it down my chest, I wait for them to say press, and then.
So is it like a second that you're there? So you can't really bounce
pause
it
bench
off.
No, yeah, right. It's pause bench press.
Wow. Did you ever talk to Mark Henry about any of this?
No, I didn't, because his numbers blow my numbers out of the water. The only thing I would touch him on was bench press, but in my head, and every real strongman or powerlifter guy, like, they know the real strength is when it comes to the squat and deadlift.
Right.
So I'm not going to be the one to brag, like, hey, how much you bench, Mark?
How much you bench?
Like, okay, sorry, you squat over 1,000 pounds. I'll go sit in the corner.
How much you bench? Talk about the Mogul Embassy and how you got involved with that.
Man, just even when we got to the embassy, Tony brought us into his office, told us that he was bringing in Nana, and Khan spoke highly of him, knowing him previously, so... And almost the same thing where, like, we looked at Nana, I'm grinning. He's like, why is that big dude just smiling over at me? And I knew from the very beginning, because how high Khan was on him, I knew he was going to be somebody that also was wanting to grind and reach it to the top, because he was also someone that came from dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was cool to get partnered up with him. And then when we heard rumblings that we were going to be put with Swerve, man, I already saw, like, I saw the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's a future world champion right there. And mm-hmm. Man, and I'll be damned if we're going to be the ones holding him down.
Let's rise
up with him. We could be the tag team, you know, that he needs right next to him, holding gold as well.
So. Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting because you see sometimes that you guys get put together, and, you know, Tony loves factions. And so, yeah, Mogul Embassy, it sounds cool. But like you said, now Swerve's broken out, and then you guys are doing great, and Cage's great. And then Nana's like the unsung hero in the company right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Very. It's wild. Like, I told him that I never met Nana, but I reached out to him via Twitter just because I'd always try to find, like, African wrestlers. Like, hey, man, I heard that you're, like, an Ashanti Prince, and I knew that you used to be back in Ring of Honor as you were a manager with Tommaso Ciampa. I loved your work. Like, I just wanted to reach out and say that to you. And then literally, like, a year later, he's walking into TK's office like, hey, I guess I'm part of you guys' group now. So things just kind of work out. That's weird.
He's from, is it Ghana?
Yeah.
Yeah,
right? Yep.
Yeah. Talk about your Ring of Honor experience. How long were you there for before the company shut down?
I think I got signed late 2018. I got brought into the Ring of Honor dojo with Joey, training 4 days a week, and then doing shows maybe every other weekend, doing the live shows. I never knew what Ring of Honor was until maybe 2 years prior to that. I remember I went to a show and I saw the Briscoes, AJ Styles, just because I always knew about like WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this show, and ironically enough, I ended up getting signed there, and then I learned about the history of the company. And just knowing about the people that went to Ring of Honor and like where they've ascended to from there, I thought it was a great jumping off point. Like, cool, I'm going to be able to get reps with some of the best wrestlers ever here, get to travel the channels. We got to drive to these shows, especially being in the dojo. They made us drive to these shows, set up the ring, did the MSG show, which was just crazy to see with so many people.
That was like a very rare non-WWE wrestling show at MSG.
Yeah. I remember myself and my old partner Moses, we had to go at 5 a.m. and help the crew build the ring and all the set design. And I'm just like looking around like, this is MSG. This is huge building. Yeah. And then New Japan, I never heard of them before. And then they came in because it was a partner show and just madness. But I'll never forget like the feeling of just standing on the side and just hearing the announcements go over and just seeing so many people in there.
Did you work the show?
I did not. Oh, gotcha. No, it's just like,
but you got to set up the ring.
Yeah, I got to set up the ring. Yeah, so I still felt a part of it.
Yeah, sure.
But then towards the end of our time, I remember Ring of Honor was a great place to get experience, but it was just funny how things kind of ended, where we were on a Zoom call and they're like, hey, we're closing down the company, or Sinclair's is closing out, and Now, we're going to have two more shows after this, so you have to go back to work after basically everyone's fired. It's like, that's...
Oh, I'm talking about lame duck feeling, right?
Yeah, like, no, I know no one wanted to do those last TV tapings, and then Final Battle just felt like a swan song.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted to just... It didn't even really matter. Just, like, go out there and bow out to the crowd and just... Let's just have this legacy and let's see what happens from there. But, again, I kind of already knew my exit path, so I wasn't too worried, but... It's sad to think about. Like, I remember watching the old DVDs. I have a couple of them. It was such, like, an era... Like, mm-hmm. old school Ring of Honor. And, like, again, Danielson was there, Samoa Joe. Like, all these superstars. This is where they cut their teeth, and now they're, like, global superstars.
Right.
And I wanted to be a part of that.
You're getting to the point where they're doing a Hammerstein Ballroom. And
it's, yeah.
I mean, that's 3,000 people or whatever it is.
I got to wrestle there once. That was a very cool experience.
Yeah.
Saw the Ladder Wars with the Young Bucks. That was quite the experience, too.
So they had you on a full Zoom call with the entire roster to say, hey, guys, we're done?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, what are you thinking then?
It felt like a funeral.
Yeah.
There was a couple of us in the dojo that were just like texting each other, like, what is going on right now? This is very strange. And then like, hey, if you guys want to get bought out of your contract, you can. Otherwise, again, we have one more taping left. And it was still COVID too. So that was just, we had to go be quarantined in a hotel for like 4 days and then tapings. And then people are losing their livelihood. It just felt very uncomfortable. I also had a shoot job the whole time. So selfishly, I'm like, I know I'm financially okay, but this is people's livelihood. This is Ring of Honor. It's just everything for some people. Right. This is just very sad.
And just to hear that it's just done.
Yeah.
In the middle of this pandemic when there's no options really.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a funeral. It was like a shock to the system.
So how long was it before you got into AEW after Ring of Honor was...
Maybe like 4 days.
Oh. So it wasn't too bad for you.
No, not for me.
I thought it was great. You mentioned it before when you guys got sent to New Japan. Mm. I think they should do that with some of our talent every tour that they have. So kind of tell me how that came to be of getting the opportunity to go there.
Well, I remember it was one day in the locker room. Brian just comes up to us, Danielson. He's like, hey, you guys interested in ever going to Japan? And we're like, oh, yeah, for sure. And then months go on. Like, you know, we even previous to that, me and him went up to Rocky and like just asking for opportunities. Like, I know they had the LA strong shows and stuff like that. Like, hey, we're hungry for opportunities, this and that. And then, you know, fast forward a year later, then the opportunity arose for the tag league. So then Rocky hits us up and like, hey, we want to book you guys. And then Tony AOK'd it. So yeah, it was something that we kind of like, it was like when we heard that they had some interest, man, we were so excited because we knew the potential that this could be.
So it was your first time in Japan?
Yeah.
Kind of tell us, go through it. It's a long flight and kind of it's a little bit of a culture shock. What'd you think?
Long flight. For me, it was like 13 hours. I think, what, 11 for you?
Yeah, is that the longest you guys have been?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me. I think I flew to find a Cameroon was like 60.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha.
But for it was work, still, yeah, yeah, very long. And then I think the big daunting thing for me was 23 days. That's a long time. That's a long time.
It is. That is
being,
long tour.
Being somewhere where you don't know the language, you don't really know anybody. We were hearing like horror stories about how small these hotels are and just holes in the ground.
The beds, you're on the floor.
Like,
you crap into a hole.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was honestly probably one of the best trips ever of my life. The food was so good. It's cheap there. The quality is so great. The locker room was amazing. I feel like we kind of treated it like training camp. We woke up early every day, went to the gym for a couple hours, got back, hung out, went to the venue, warmed up again with the talent, and then had the match and just like,
rinse and repeat.
Yeah, Groundhog's Day every single day. But it was so much fun. It was to go to a different new town every day and just looking around and seeing, I don't know, just look at, not even the culture stuff, just experiencing and appreciating the culture, how clean it is, how respectful people are. Like, I loved it over there.
Yeah, I would say the only thing I missed was family.
Right.
That would be the only thing, working over there, just, you know, living over there for those 23 days was... It could have been a lot worse. Like, the space was not the biggest, but also we're in those rooms just to sleep anyway. Yeah. So I'm not looking to party. So
dude, I went to Japan with Yokozuna, with Rodney. So just imagine he's twice your size. So it was hard for him.
Yeah.
He'd be okay. He'd be okay. So talk about who were the other foreign guys on the tour.
Was it Lance Archer, Alex Zane?
Alex Coughlin.
So not a lot, though.
Nah, not a lot.
So who are you guys, are you traveling with, what bus are you guys traveling on? Heels bus?
Babyface.
Babyface.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Big babyface.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
That Nana. Yeah. That carried over.
Thanks so they had you put this babyface, right?
Yeah.
I used to love that because it's been so, I mean, obviously I've been to Japan so many times, but back in the old days when you get on the bus and you ride for, you know, 6 hours and you get there and it's 4 o'clock and you got to get ready for the show that starts at six. And it's like, it's something that we don't have here in AW because we only worked essentially once a week, right?
Yeah.
It's twice, there's 3 days in between or whatever. So how was that for you guys with that schedule?
For me, it was a good mental and physical like test. Because once you got into the routine, it's always mental. Like, because we force ourselves to go to the gym, because we force ourselves to, like, do an early warm-up with, you know, with the team or with everyone that would do a warm-up in the ring before the show, all those extra steps we took, our body was ready by the end of it. I think we were both in agreement that our last show, we felt the best after than we did before our first show, which is kind of mind-boggling to think 17 matches in 23 days and you feel better afterwards.
Right.
You know, so I was pretty happy how we called things throughout that whole 3 weeks.
Same. Because I think we went balls to the wall the first show. And after that first show, I was like, oh, I'm hurting already. Like, we got 2.5 more weeks after this.
You got to pace yourself.
Like, yeah, hey, exactly.
We used to call them, this is a ranch town, farm town,
yep.
Country town. Okay, now we're in Osaka, big city. Okay, ramp it up a bit. Okay, we're in Tokyo. That's the one you got to hit 5 out of stars, you know?
Yep. But like you said, it was kind of like a mental test. You get there at 4 and you're like, oh, you only have 2 hours? And just... it's not more lax there, but I think people are so confident in their skills that hey, we don't need to stress about this stuff. Wrestling is easy. Like, if you understand and get it, it's pretty easy. So I think after the first couple of shows, like, oh, we don't have to stress. We're veterans. We're people that are great talents who were stepping up to the plate and knocking it out every single time. Like, this is, no, we got this. We got this. It's all right.
Especially if you say intense and with the way you guys look. I mean, you know, people are always intimidated. Or in this case, if you're babyface, they're probably going to be cheering for you, but you guys don't look like the typical people that live there, right? So that helps a lot too. What kind of training did you do with the team when you got to the arena?
What was it? They've done this warm up since what, like 75?
I know. That's what I wanted to say. It
just like some light stretches, but then some like leg swings, and then you just kind of got just loosened up.
It's funny because it's as we were watching. Because at first, like, I don't know, for me, I felt intimidated in the sense of, like, I don't want to step on toes, and I don't want to start something and not finish it with the team if I'm not doing it correctly.
Yeah.
So at first, it was just kind of watching, and then when we saw all the other guys that are, like, from the CMLL boys or, you know, the guys that were part of New Japan that got to fly out there, they started joining the warm-ups, and then we were like, hey, let's try it out. And literally, man, it's just, like, it's small little movements, but, man, it's like the pre-warm-up to the warm-up. And I don't know. For me, the older I get, these little extra little warm-ups, man. Like, you know, I'm a big muscle car, so you got to take me around the block a few times.
Did they ever bust out the tire?
They did. Yeah. I wanted to try that out.
Explain that, what they do with a tire.
Basically, just back bends over the tire and then having the young boys just pushing on you on both sides and just really stretching you out. What got me was watching the Young Lions train, and they were just bumping so much, like hip tosses for 30 minutes straight. And I was like, I kind of want to try that. And he's like, don't do that. Why would you do that? Just going to go beat yourself
four
up.
Four shows in a row one day. Three shows in a row. It's like,
but they're machines. You can see how they train. I could see why. There's a certain standard of quality that comes out of New Japan. That's why.
Well, they take it very seriously, too. Like, and it kind of was like that when I first started. But now, nothing against anybody. Anybody ever puts on a pair of boots or sneakers or jean shorts and goes to the ring, I have respect for, but the training level here is not the same. And you can tell just by the way that body types are nowadays and that sort of a thing. But those guys, there's no guarantee they're going to make it to the big leagues. So they have to train their asses off and watch all the matches and do all the jobs. Then when they finally get a chance to get sent away on their excursion, that's when they're ready to, you know, come back and rock it. But it's not guaranteed.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me again, so much praise in Joey Mercury, because he'd always tell us all the time, you are a superstar. The way that you train, the way that you eat, take care of your body, present yourself. Like, you need to look at in yourself, in your mind, that you are a superstar as a professional wrestler. And there's a lot of people that don't deserve to do this, but they do get to do it. But they should be on the other side of the guardrail. So just myself having that mentality, but then seeing how much they trained, like, I love that.
Yeah.
I respect that, because that's how I'd want to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tire is crazy. You would bridge back over the tire, your nose on the ground and your foot on the ground.
Yep.
It's just like anybody that has a spare tire at home, give that a shot and see if you can do that.
Oh, man, I remember the young lions pushing some of the vets down, and they're just groaning like, "Yeah, maybe let's not do it."
So, who were some of your favorite matches with that you had over there against the various teams?
Man,
I like those War Dogs.
The War Dogs,
Gabe
man.
Kidd, the Bullet Club War Dogs, Gabe Kidd and Coughlin, Alex Coughlin.
Nice guy, yeah, the LA guys, right?
Yeah,
they were so
intense.
Talking about intensity and aggressive, like that's something we pride ourselves in.
Yeah,
and watching them. It almost got me hot to where I was like, how does it feel like they're more intense and more aggressive than us?
Yeah.
So I took it as like, hell no. Nah. So when we faced them, we ramped up ourselves over 1,000 or whatever we've done. And then because of that, I even thanked them over it. I feel like they turned a switch in our heads because they don't overthink shit.
No.
They just go.
Mm.
And like they're aggressive in intensity and like we'll apologize after.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was like you can see it in their work. And I feel like they brought the best out of their opponents and they brought the best out of me that night. And now it's like going into every match, I'm like, I got to bring that same intensity.
Yep.
You know, that was actually a funny thing. It was like when I was training, one of my knocks was like, Kishi would always see that I always rise up to whoever I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been doing that. Like, if someone's, like, really good in training, I might be new, but I'll rise up with them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I need to keep that certain standard no matter who's in front of me. So it's, like, things that started clicking a little bit more and more now. So but I was like War Dogs for sure.
And then we ended with Okada and Tanahashi.
Nice.
Which is funny because after the, like, tag league tournament, they're like, oh, yeah, easy eight-man tags after this.
We
had an eight-man tag. And then the last match, Okada, Tanahashi.
I guess everyone else gets the easy multi. Yeah.
Talk about that. Those are two of the all-time greats.
That was so surreal. So surreal, just standing in the ring. I always like talk to him in the ring too, and I see like even like your entrance coming out. I'm like, do you know who this is coming out right now? Like the pyro. Like, this is just a childhood dream come true.
Mm.
Seeing the Rainmaker and money coming down, people just losing their minds for Okada. I'm like, okay,
it's hilarious too because I got to stall off the match, and I've only felt that one time, and that was in the ring with you.
Oh.
Like how the crowd reacted.
Mm.
It was the only two times I can be in the ring and like, oh shit, this is star power. Like, the crowd just starts. Yeah. They just take over the show because then no one's rushing anything because everyone's just letting it happen. And I'm just sitting there like, wow, this is awesome. So it kind of brought me back to that. And I recalled, I was like, all right, I didn't let that affect me then. I'm not going to let it affect me now. You know, it's BU Bubble Cup.
There's electricity there though, right? And they want that.
Yeah.
You know, I worked, I think, 6 matches with New Japan pre-pandemic. And my favorite was with Tanahashi. The Kenny match is the famous one.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite is the Tanahashi one because, once again, it's a guy that, like, he doesn't do a lot, but he does everything.
Yeah.
You know, his whole presentation and the way he moves, and it was just so good. I loved Tanahashi. I would work with him every night if I could. You know?
Same. They have such an aura when they go out there, and it's palpable. You can feel it.
That's right. That's what pro wrestling, when you think, when people go to Japan, oh, it's strong style, and it is, but a guy like Tana doesn't do a lot, but he doesn't have to, and that's not a bad thing. It's a great thing.
Yeah. Yep. You know? Less is more here.
That's it. That's it. You know, and then once again, we have a tendency here to call most of the match in the back in the States. Out there, there's not that.
No, and I love that so much. I wish we could call more stuff on the fly and just feel it out there. We all know the basic language of wrestling.
That's right.
You can just feel the rest.
Maybe it's because of time limits and TV and stuff like that. I don't know. It's different when you have 30 minutes and you can do what you want, right?
Yeah.
It's a whole different vibe than when you have 10 and you got a break in the middle and tell the producer, you know.
Yep.
But I find that working in Japan gives you a lot more respect for the wrestling business.
Very.
And respect for the fans, too. You know, they watch you there.
Mm-hmm.
And they study what you're doing. If you do a nice reversal, you get cheered for it. And then it goes back silent again.
Like, it was funny. I did a funny bit during the tag league. We got our belt stolen. And I did a little bit to where, like, I hold the belt, like, closer to my chest. I'm screaming mine to all the people trying to get it. And I just see the fans in the corner just snickering, laughing. So then I just even leaned on it where there's, like, me looking at them, me taking my belt. And, like, yeah, just, like, those little things. The fans are watching everything because I'm like, oh, this little bit, we'll see if it gets over. I'm
right.
Like, oh, this is getting over way more than I thought.
More than you expected.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the culture shock of being in Japan, you know, as far as just the way of life there. And you mentioned you liked the food. Was there any moments where you were there where it was kind of like, what the hell is going on here?
The day we probably had horse meat for me.
Probably, don't know for sure.
It's this little restaurant, like everyone is so close and compact, and you just see like the raw horse meat come out first. Like, oh, we're gonna cook that, right? No, we're not gonna cook that first. You're just gonna eat that as is. It wasn't bad at all. I kind of liked it. And you had, it's kind of like going out the sponsor dinners where you have someone take you out and they're just putting food in front of you. And they, this man can eat so much more than I can. And I felt so bad. It's like, I can't eat any more steak. I'm full. I have abs. I have to focus for tomorrow.
That's the best thing with being Samoan. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Have any abs. Yeah. I always love that with the sponsor when they would take you out. And like you said, and sometimes it's yakiniku, Korean barbecue, which yep. I love. And other times it'd be like some weird sushi or something, but mm-hmm. you can't insult the sponsor and be like, oh, this is so bad. At the end of the night, he'd shake your hand, give you money for the taxi and be like, you know, 100,000 yen or something. It's like, yeah. Oh, I made $1,000 just to hang out, man. Did you guys have a lot of sponsor dinners there?
We had a few to where mm-hmm. some of the boys would invite us out to their sponsor dinner. Mm-hmm. So like, man, that whole trip was like a really good bonding moment with the boys from New Japan.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we created a new brotherhood with those people over there, even with some of the boys from CMLL.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so those 3 weeks, I feel like we created a brothership with everyone that was on that tour.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, when you're around each other every day for, things mentioned, 23 yeah. days, there's a different vibe there. You know what I mean? It's not like it is here when you see each other once a week. You know, mm-hmm. it's... Yeah. There, you get up in the morning, you're on the bus together, you're traveling, you're at the truck stop, you make it to the venue, you do yep. the show, you get back on the bus, you know, you go to the hotel, have a drink. It's different experience.
Yeah, no,
definitely.
Sure.
It started with like handshakes and people kind of being a little apprehensive with us, not really talking to us too much. And then the last day, everyone's hugging each other. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, we'll see you down the road. And just felt like a little family reunion, saying goodbye to everyone. We'll see you guys later.
Do you guys think you'll get a chance to go back there? Has it been discussed?
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah, I think Gato was a big fan of us. So good, yeah. Yeah.
Gato, man, he was awesome. Even from when we first started for our first match all the way to the end, he really did a really good job in like looking out for us. And we kept coming up to him asking for like feedback and things that we can do and change. And I think it's helped us as a team overall. And we bring a lot of those ideas that he pitched to us in our beginning matches, that he was like, hey, I wouldn't do that here. I would do this here. It really pays off for us here now that we're back in the States, where we go back to TV. What I would do for a throwaway, I'm like, oh, no, that's a lot bigger than I anticipated. Mm-hmm. Now I can use it in the back end now.
Well, you're learning that stuff. I mean, you've only been in the business for 3 years or so, right? Yeah. And Bishop, you've been a little bit longer, right?
Just over 7.
I mean, you know, I've been 33 and I'm still learning. So yeah. You guys are very young to the business. And that's why going to Japan at this point in time mm-hmm. is such a great lesson in the ring, but also life lesson out of the ring too.
For sure. You have to learn to like handle yourself.
Yeah.
I meet so many people at the schools that we might train at sometimes that are early 20s. And to me, they're just kids. Like, you guys have no idea how this actually is as an adult. Like, yeah. you have a lot you're going to have to experience in wrestling. And like, it's so much bigger than this.
Right. Yeah, I was laughing when you first came in to AW and you had the name Khan. I was like, kind of the same name as you, Tony.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Was there one point just calling you Bishop or something like that?
And then yeah.
Tony's like, it's okay, it's his name. But like, it's your name too.
Yeah. I remember I was talking to him about that. I was like, hey, man, I didn't know you in 2017 when I got this name. Like, it's just the irony here that this happened, the same thing. But it's spelled differently.
Yeah. You got Nick Khan, Tony Khan, Bishop Khan.
Great O'Con, yeah, there's a lot of cons out here. Great
O'Con. Killer Khan, who just passed away. Last, as we start to wind down here, now you're back in AEW after Japan. I know that was just a few months ago. Got lots of great stuff happening. So what are kind of your overall goals for this year in 2024?
I think number one is tag team gold. A real shot and run at the tag team gold, either AEW, Ring of Honor, and like get in that division, because we've been doing six-man stuff for the past year. And I think
year and a half.
We've solidified that we're like the greatest six-man champs of all time, Ring of Honor. So,
and you're the six-man champ.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Time to evolve, to move up.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I would think biggest goals for us would definitely be the AEW tag team gold, and also to be a part of a big pay-per-view, whether it's, you know, All In this year. You know, we're Wembley. Shooting, yeah, for Wembley. So a lot of these things, man, we just want validation. And I feel like going and proving ourselves in the biggest stage that any wrestling promotion could offer, such as Wembley, I feel like would really solidify us as a tag team and kind of showcase and prove everyone that, you know, we're here to stay and we belong, you know, to showcase in front of, you know, 81,000, over 80,000 people, man. I don't think of any other better place than to showcase or prove that we deserve to be here.
Agreed.
Than the biggest place of them all.
Being a six-man champion, is there major differences between a tag team match and a six-man match for you guys?
I mean, for us, I think just being us in the tag team, we always have to account for Brian. Always have the third out there. But
like early on, it helped a lot. Like, you know, putting the matches together, you know, and stuff like that. But now that me and Con are starting to have our own vibe, our own like ideas when it comes into working, it's kind of harder to mix it now with Brian. But even so, I feel like even our last couple six-man matches have been pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it's just we just don't have the same reps with him as we did when we were in Japan. So it's one of those things that we just been focusing on and honing in on our tag team craft. So when we transition to our six-man, it's not that it's not as good as our tag team. It's just not as crisp.
Right.
Yeah. But
right.
when we do come back to the six-man, it's better than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah.
So I think that's
a good way to put it.
There's an art form to it.
Yeah.
You know, there really is. Who are you guys working tonight?
Got Bullet Club Gold.
Yeah, Jay White and
the Gun
that's
Club.
That's in the Gun Club. That's a big spotlight for you guys.
Yeah, no, definitely excited for that one.
Yeah,
that was one of the matches that one of the teams I wanted to face going into this year. So, like I said, coming for the top guys in the company to showcase that we belong in that same upper echelon too.
Yeah, definitely.
Last question for you: what's your favorite match that you've ever had? Does one of them stand out?
You can go first, type of thing.
Favorite match, I would definitely say my first one. And the only reason why I would say that was because I had so much fear going into my first match. And I remember going out to the crowd and panning like eye level with the crowd. Like, wow, there's a lot of people. And then I pick my head up. I'm like, oh, there's more people. And then I pick my head up one more time. I'm like, oh, shit, there's a lot of people in here. I think because we was in Orlando, I think we sold like over 10,000. And it was Elevation against FTR. And like, I just remember like, man, after all those years and like all those, you know, the years of like training and like putting all of that hard work in with the family, and I'm like, now it's either put up or shut up time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that would be my favorite match. And then my favorite two moments, I definitely would say, like what I said earlier, was like being in the ring with like you and Okada before the match even started.
That's cool.
Because that's the first time, like I said, I'm a pandemic wrestler. So
yeah.
The first time like I can really feel the crowd before the match even started. So those are the two instances. So I'll say those.
Jeez. This is tough. But I think sometimes my girlfriend tells me that I have a hard time really being humble and like taking in everything that I've done so far. So I was talking to somebody the other day, like I got to wrestle Dustin in the main event of Rampage in Austin, and that just happened by happenstance. Like I got called at 4:00, I had to drive an hour and a half there, and I got to wrestle with someone that I watched growing up as Goldust, like on national television in the main event. And like I just couldn't even process that happened. And sometimes after these matches too, I'll go just sit by myself in the corner. I'm just not coming down, but like trying to realize that I'm living my dream. Like it's very hard to just, I told him I'm never going to get used to this. I walk into these buildings. I'm like, I used to, as 10 years old, I used to watch like videos of the backstage stuff and like the Fed and be like, oh, I wonder what wrestlers do. And I'm doing it. I'm living my dream. And it's just every time is like a great moment for me. It's I'm still speechless. Yeah.
Do you speak any Cameroon?
They speak Pidgin, which is like a mix of French and English. My dad kind of lost the language, so I don't know anything other than like, c'est notre destin, which is like, this is my destiny. So I want to teach myself French because I think that'd be a nice little...
I didn't realize Cameroon is French.
Yeah, the French colonized Cameroon. I forgot whenever that happened, but...
Do you speak any Samoan?
A few words.
Give me a word in Samoan.
Tolofa. And Olofa.
and Malo.
Malo.
Thanks, guys.
No, thank you.